Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Tuesday morning. 9:14 is the time. Ray Graff here. It's the panel, you know, and we have a great panel for you in store today. We have J.P. Miller from the Empire Report. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You feeling awake and ready to go?
I'm feeling so good.
How long have you been up?
I got up at 4 a.m. this morning, and I'm feeling it's great to wake up early. You feel
it,
good.
It really is.
But that's when he has to do all of the put all the stuff into the Empire
the
Report.
The aggregation process?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Mike Spain is here, former associate editor of the Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
You look relaxed as well.
Good. I didn't get up at 4.
No?
No.
It's really good for the Constitution. Speaking of that, Alan gets up at 2. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, sir.
I do. I get up at 2:30 maybe.
Yeah.
Sometimes I look at the Times and some other stuff.
What does Roselle think about that?
She thinks I'm nuts.
Yeah. Also, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is here. You just got back into the States, eh?
I did.
What
happened?
I
spent a weekend in Macedonia, something, you know, everybody ought to try.
What for?
It's an old Barry Manilow
song.
I was
training young journalists. It's a U.S. government program to train young journalists to question authority and ask hard questions. It was very fun. They're a lovely group of people.
You got harassed by TSA on the way back, huh?
I hate TSA.
What happened?
Okay. So I bring back from Macedonia a jar of Ivar, which is eggplant and peppers. And it's in a jar. I bought it in duty-free, so they put it in the bag and seal it. I go through Macedonian airport, no problem. Go through Istanbul, no problem. I come to Dulles, and they pull my bag off, and they surround me like I'm carrying
Wait, now, this is after you're already off the plane and back.
Yes, I'm trying to get on the flight from Albany to Albany.
Cool.
You're in your home country.
I'm in my home country. And they go, is this a gel? I said, it's Ivar. It's food. They go, well, we may have to test this. So they call over their
boss.
Got
some crackers out.
Yeah, they call. Yeah, that's what I should have done. They call over the boss. I'm just shaking my head in disbelief. And he goes, and he's turning it over. And the guy's going, she claims she got it in duty-free. I go, it's in the sealed duty-free bag. I did get it in duty-free. Why would they sell this if it's not, if it's dangerous? And they go, no, we're not allowed. I said, are you really going to take my Ivar? And they go, no, we're not going to take it, but you can't go past the checkpoint with it. I said, that's taking it. No, I had to tell them that I volunteered to leave it there. So anyway, I'm out 10 euros for the Ivar, and Washington, D.C. is safe from a condiment from the Balkans.
Okay.
This is why I hate. This is so stupid.
Didn't you say, I want your name?
No, I didn't. I mean, they said, oh, well, you can go put this in your check bag. But, of course, the bag
is
checked.
Why didn't you do that?
Because have you been to Dulles? It's a 2-mile walk, at least, to go back from where you are to
checkout. Why didn't you do it right away?
Because I had no problem with it. I bought it in duty-free, and I had no problem with it at 2 other airports.
Your
Who
bags
anticipated?
Were already checked when
of
you
course.
Bought it at duty-free.
Of course.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, I love that line, though. TSA, making America safe for condiments.
There you go.
That's very nice.
No spicy Balkan relish in America.
Well, you could have brought that in for the show.
Rick Orlando has promised me a jar when he saw me complaining about this on Facebook. So.
I have a quick question. Are the journalists allowed to question authority in Macedonia, or is that not encouraged?
Oh, yeah. The Balkans' method of dealing with the press is they simply ignore them. So, but it's really different from us. Instead of complaining or tweeting, they just completely ignore it. It has a similar effect. Macedonia is pretty corrupt. The Balkans all are. I was telling people that all through the city, they've built monuments. And Washington has monuments. They're tasteful. They're planned. One is connected to the other. This is, they spent almost $700 million, a figure that only came up from investigative reporting, putting up these wacko, gigantic, humongous statues of lions and horses and pregnant women to honor mothers. And they're all over the Capitol. Amazing.
How big is Macedonia?
It's a small country. The city of Skopje has 1 million people. That's the biggest city.
Well, all right. Well, we've settled
that. So
thank
you. That was.
Thank you. I'm glad to get you revved up.
That was my travel log.
Well done. The email address is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Brief letters, always encouraged. Long letters, discouraged. Really long letters are thrown away. Don't include links, no attachments, no abbreviations, please, and do proofread at least once. panel@wamc.org. Iran says arrests have been made over the shootdown of a Ukrainian plane that killed all 176 people on board. A judiciary spokesman says, quote, extensive investigations have taken place and some individuals are arrested.
Well, I mean, we talked the other day about how the guys who were reporting to the prince in Saudi Arabia were all arrested, tried, convicted, and sentenced to death.
Justice, speedy justice, right?
It's incredible. And here these guys who obviously were doing what they were trained to do and the rest of it, they're going to get the full extent of the law, too. It's either him or the Ayatollah, them or the Ayatollah.
Well, I think in Saudi Arabia, there weren't necessarily protests in the streets about it.
Probably not.
In Iran, there were quite a number of protests about this, so we'll see what happens. Meanwhile, Britain, France, and Germany say they're triggering a dispute mechanism that is part of the nuclear deal with Iran over its failure to live up to terms of the pact. Leaders of the three nations say in a statement, "They've been left with no choice, given Iran's actions, but to register today our concerns that Iran is not meeting its commitments."
We have to talk about, we made a mistake, and by we, I mean journalists, and I'm one of them, and we said, oh, this whole incident that Trump set off with Iran would unite people around the hardliners, the current government in Iran. Clearly, that did not happen. And this dispute over an airline crash that has, it's massive protests and tear gassing and police response, is anger at the government that goes far deeper than one plane crash. It has to do with higher prices and the squeeze being put on people because of the sanctions by the U.S. So we have to look at, tell me what you think about this. Is Trump's policy working? He wanted to put pressure on the government
to
get him back.
No, I disagree.
There's nothing to disagree with. I'm asking.
No, I mean, we said it would
do one thing, and it didn't.
Well,
I just want to point out that I posed that question yesterday and was roundly castigated for even asking the question.
Really?
But I'm glad you're asking it as well.
Okay.
I think it's a good policy question.
I'll tell you one thing. Trump's actions have resulted in an accident that killed a plane load of people. Those were casualties of war that was initiated by the U.S. policy to take out this general. And the U.S. policy was directed by the president. Even the Secretary of Defense over the weekend, you know that, said that there wasn't convincing evidence. He did not see convincing evidence as to that Soleimani was an immediate imminent threat on U.S. Embassies in the Mideast. But that policy is reckless. And when people begin, when presidents initiate war, essentially, an act of war, it doesn't legally rise to the level of an act of war. But when they authorize that kind of aggression, there's going to be casualties. And that plane was a casualty of it. And a bunch of people from Ukraine and Canada and elsewhere are
in Iran, a lot of
and a lot of Iranians. Yeah,
but Mike, yes, I agree with all of that. I do think it's reckless. I certainly don't agree with it. But his point is, I'm going to be really hard on them and press them to come back to the table and give me everything I want. And the government is clearly in trouble with its people. Isn't it having the intended effect?
It's disrupting things in Iran,
yeah.
and it's a very volatile place. And today, the New York Times is reporting that Iran doesn't have the money
to fight
the U.S., and that's why they're backing off, and that may be the reason that they didn't attack the U.S. Troops directly. They just landed the missiles near them so that no casualties were taken against, of U.S. soldiers were taken. So, if the president's plan is to throw a hand grenade onto an already volatile country, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, I'm saying the plane going down is one of the results of this chaos that's going on.
Casualty
what else might
of war
happen?
Is what Trump is saying, and there's some credibility in that. Because there's other people to take blame.
So you think it may be good U.S. policy to cause a civil war in Iran?
No, you cannot be outraged at me because I don't agree with it, but I'm posing the question.
Oh,
from
you
their
don't
point
agree with
view,
it, but you seem to be defending it.
I'm questioning whether it might
somebody
work.
Ate his Wheaties today.
Yeah.
All right, calm down there, Spain. Alan.
I'm for it. So the next question is, of course, remembering the historical antecedent, which is that the Iranian people were getting antsy to begin with for quite a while now. So this just sets this thing off in terms of what was there. In other words, we know that the Iranians were sick and tired of not having a decent economy and not having jobs and not having the right kind of education, and boom, they get real tough. And we see that so that one day they're protesting the downing of the aircraft, and the next day they're out there saying, hey, we're back to normal now. We don't like what's going on in this country.
Ray, you also have to go back to your original question on the Iran deal. You have to go back to the Iran deal. Back in 2015, Chuck Schumer, the top-ranking Democrat in the Senate, opposed the Iran deal. And for the top-ranking senator of the party of the President of the United States, Barack Obama, to oppose one of the biggest foreign policy deals of the presidency, you know, it gives credence to the argument that this was an ill-advised deal going in. And we can see now these other countries that are questioning what's going on.
Britain, France, and Germany. However, Iran said a couple weeks ago they're bailing out on this deal anyway. So I'm not sure
if they didn't immediately bail out while they said that. I mean, they still were adhering to some of it. You know, it's confusing. It's like they want to have their cake and eat it too. They want to sort of have the results of the deal benefit them. It's negotiable. I mean, I think they're negotiating, don't you?
So if they can do that, you'd go back to the point of it was not a good deal, and us withdrawing was potentially
a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure we'll get an email or two on that. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org.
I just want to say that I'm with Mike on all of this.
Really?
Yes.
You pose a question.
You guys are like, too.
I mean, I don't like this, but I think Trump has played this really well, except for his lousy farce in his notes.
He's gotten very lucky.
I mean, even the idea of blaming, I think he's at fault for the plane, but I had a fight with my son yesterday who's blaming why was Ukrainian Airlines flying at this particular time?
Right.
Why didn't they pull their planes?
Well, that's the big question.
Yeah. I blame Ukrainian Air. It makes me wonder about flying them anymore. That was not a good decision.
Have you flown them before?
Yeah, I have, but this makes me think.
Well, don't you think it's the air traffic control in Tehran that they would have to ground the planes?
Iran certainly not only has blame, they took blame and they sentenced people to death for it. So it's not as if it's clear as day to people that Trump was at fault, which is always the case with him. He always has a way to say, see, it worked out.
I'm not sure they've sentenced anybody to death yet.
I was going to say that too. They have arrested them.
They're putting them on trial.
The president, exactly. A special court is going to be set up here.
Sorry, I got them mixed up with the people who took care of Ben Salman.
I got that.
But I think it's unbelievable that after they launched missiles at the base in Iraq, that nobody told the airport, hey, better not fly.
Shut down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they screwed up, and they have finally acknowledged it reluctantly after trying to portray it as mechanical failures on the part of the airline or something like the airplane or something like that.
The infuriating thing, Mike, is that it isn't clear that it was Trump's fault, and it's very similar to we who say he's responsible for the hate crime and division in this country because of the way he talks. And his supporters are able to say, well, no, it's other things. It happened before him. This has been going on a long time. It's the same thing with Iran. He's not being blamed, as I think he should be, for that plane, because they say instead some of the same stuff. It should have been the air traffic controllers, should have been the airlines.
Yeah, but none of this would have even been an issue had we not taken out the general. Right?
I don't agree with this, but if I were a general, I'm not sure that I would connect taking out someone I saw as a terrorist with a plane crash, civilian plane crash. I would not put those two together. It's not a natural consequence.
Well, except one thing led to another. I mean, you go back to the beginning. If the president hadn't taken the guy out, Soleimani out, then I have a feeling none of what we're mourning right now would have happened, right?
Agreed. But then you'd never have a war, which is not a bad idea. Stuff always happens when you start a war.
Do you think a civil war breaking out in Iran is good thing to happen, or is it better to be an easier transition?
I think it's ridiculous foreign policy, but I think that is the policy that Pompeo and Bolton and
they're trying
Trump
to create chaos in
regime change,
Iran.
And they want the same in North Korea. And you know the other thing, he's
so you send him a birthday card and praise him. I mean, the approaches are vastly different.
Isn't that interesting?
Now, when you were over in Macedonia, were you following that? I guess you mentioned it. The president was tweeting, and they had the translation.
They're correcting his Farsi. I love that. Yeah.
Now,
was quite
you know, American governments and other governments have always tried to drive a wedge in unstable situations in areas they want to change, but this is a kind of a new thing now. doing this via Twitter in real time.
Oh, yeah. What's your opinion on that? Trump has really weaponized Twitter. I don't think it's it is effective, but mostly it's effective because we journalists pick up everything he tweets and make a story out of it.
What are you going to do? Not do it?
Ignore it. And you can't do that, as we've said many times.
Well, they do in Macedonia. They just ignore it, right?
The government ignores the media. The media would be ignoring the government. Ah. Nobody does that.
Hmm. All right. Well, we only have about a minute here before the news. Anybody else want to weigh in on anything related to this before we change topics?
Oh, we could bash TSA.
Feel free.
Or we could talk about the Royals.
You have 30. The Royals.
That
Royals
takes more than 30 seconds. Longer, yeah.
Nothing irritates me more with this strange royal fetish that we have as a country.
That's because we don't
have a British colony, you know, Ray.
Well, it was a long time ago, Mikey. Even Shartok doesn't remember back that far.
But princesses are interesting. We need a little. I'm sad that this great story that was a break from the Trump travesty.
Well, we brought it up.
Now it's become, you know, ugly. It's about racism and millennials separating from the traditions of the past. It's heavy. Everything's gotten heavy. Volcanoes in the Philippines.
It's the end of days, right?
It sounds like it.
They've been saying that for thousands of years. Let's take a break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org. It's a good panel today, in theory. Mike Spain is here, a former associate editor of the Times Union. Empire Report's J.P. Miller is here. Investigative journalist, world traveler, Rosemary Armeo is here. WAMC's Alan Shartok. Once again, our email address, if you'd like to join the conversation, panel@wamc.org, and we will be right back. The Roundtable is a Quinn Martin production. That is music of Koto Neche, and the album is Supervillains. That's pretty cool stuff. It's the Roundtable panel. 9:34 is the time. Ray Graff with you. And our panel today, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. The email address is panel@wamc.org. And when he's done with his phone, he'll probably read a few letters.
Oh, come on now. Don't pick on me.
Put the phone down and read the last letters.
I'm trying to see whether there's something important happening out there.
Okay, man.
Yeah, okay.
Well, there's something going on important here.
Paul, okay, here's an important letter from Paul.
All right.
Paul, Alan gets up at 2:30, exclamation point. If Alan gets up at 2:30 a.m., what time does he go to bed?
2:27.
No, I go to bed at 7:30 in the evening. And when our five-year-old comes and stays with us, five-year-old grandson, he laughs. He thinks that's funny that I go to bed before he does.
Oh, well.
But that's exactly when I go to bed.
Well, thank you for asking.
And thank you for answering, Alan. Glenn says, Iran and the impeachment. The timing would make one wonder if the Iran assignation was meant, and that's what it says, assignation.
All right, proofread.
Knew what he was doing. Was meant to appease John Bolton. Let's see if he is still willing to testify, and that's from Glenn. Glenn, I think you make a very good point, which is this may be BS that Bolton says he wants to testify. Another great man, President Trump, has also said that he wants to testify. But when it comes to push versus shove, he don't want to testify in the colloquial words of the masses. He don't want to testify. So, and I think that may be true with Bolton also.
All right, sir.
I just thought I'd mention that. Anybody else on that?
Well, there are. I think yesterday they announced that there are three Republicans that are now willing to vote to have him to testify, and they only need one more Republican. Is that going to happen, Alan?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question, JP, or even your cousin PJ, who may even know more than you, on this, and that is, if you were one of those, if you were Susan Collins, and you wanted to be reelected, this is the perfect out for you. You say, I want witnesses, because that way, when it comes to selling out and voting not to convict Trump, she'll say, well, I was always there. I called him on this other stuff. Don't you see?
Do you think that these three Republican senators have been given the okay sign from Mitch McConnell and that this is orchestrated, that those three Republican senators are allowed to go against him and they're holding all the others? Yeah, or do you think it's possible another Republican will go?
In all my years of teaching political science, I always said, you're in the tank, meaning you have to do what the leader tells you unless the leader lets you go. So you make a good point. But I do think, they have to be very careful about letting people off on this one because this could start a landslide. Rosemary, are you going to say?
Yeah. Did you read the New York Times article this week about Kentucky, which is a huge Trump state? He is the most popular politician in ages there.
Right.
And there's a lot of pressure on McConnell to defend him. He's in a tight race himself. He's very unpopular. And they are expecting him to defend the president, to cooperate with him, to do exactly what he's done. So why then would the leader be saying to anybody, no, you can go on your own way? I think it's the opposite.
Well, to keep their vote. In other words, I think...
To keep their vote on the final impeachment.
Well,
to
keep them as re-election.
Getting re-elected. Yeah. I think JP makes a very good point. You need them. And the Democrats do the same thing, by the way. Who's the guy from West Virginia?
Joe Manchin.
Yeah. They have to protect him also. And it may well be that he'll be allowed not to vote for conviction on Trump.
So if that is happening, it's possible that there then won't be a fourth Republican senator and that they'll just have three.
Exactly right. It's exactly right.
Well, give it a bipartisan appearance that there was more than just a party line vote against witnesses. It was putting down a bipartisan effort to get witnesses before the Senate trial.
But of course, with Trump, you never know how angry he's going to get. He's been angry before at some of the top people in his own party. So he could get very angry again. He may feel, if this is true, if we know it, and he knows it, he may get very angry that they're letting those three off the hook.
Well, and also, we don't know what is going to come out over the coming days. And people, I think Speaker Pelosi has been criticized for holding the articles of impeachment, but she may be waiting and they may be developing and getting more evidence or going to pop something over the coming days that might get another Republican senator or two to vote for it.
Yeah, this guy, this Giuliani pal.
Lev Parnas.
All of a sudden, he's singing like a canary.
A lot of documents going on.
Yeah. So who knows what's in that?
And how quickly can they digest those documents and analyze them and pick out what they're going to make public and not public?
And will it be usable in the trial?
Right. Can they introduce it in the Senate trial if it wasn't already included in the articles of impeachment? That's the question, I guess.
Did you see Kellyanne's hubby, George, had a theory that Pelosi should still be playing this? Send over one article of impeachment.
Yes.
And hold the other one because then you could continue to develop the sort of evidence we're talking about. That's pretty cool.
That's what she should do.
Yeah. I like that theory.
I wonder if that's even being considered.
Well, we don't know, but John Dean was the one who suggested holding it. And remember, our listeners began asking us about it, and that was indeed under consideration. So it made me wonder when I saw it from Conroy. He's got some pretty good insider information.
I'm sure they consider everything when they're sitting there.
Well, then it would just be a drip, drip, drip through the next several months.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. A lot of drips.
Yeah. Carl says, Senate impeachment witnesses. Sorry, but all this sounds pathetically similar to the build-up to the Kavanaugh hearing, especially Senator Collins, who teased us for days that she had a shred of independence. Call her out, please, Carl, from Hyde Park. Yeah, that's right.
Totally.
I did call her out already, probably after you wrote this note. But yeah, she's going to do everything she can to survive. And that's why they're letting her off the hook on this.
Well, she also has a very I have a friend in Maine who said, a very well-informed friend in Maine, who said that she has the toughest reelection fight of her life this year with a very well-funded statewide candidate Democrat coming up this year. So she is very focused on political survival, as all the politicians are.
Yep. And then we heard from John. Is Trump policy working? Is the maximum pressure campaign working? Well, that's a step forward that the panel finally admits there is a policy instead of saying there is nothing. the policy that is in place is working bigly.
Well, I love it.
Bigly.
Bigly.
Trump is starving the regime of its terrorist funding capacities. This is quite a contrast to actually have the U.S. provide Iran funding while providing a clean pathway to nukes. Regards, John. All right. Thank you for writing, John.
I didn't mean it quite as triumphantly as he did when I raised the question, but okay.
Scott says, sanctions and siege warfare. Panel, sanctions, in quotes, really represents a cruel kind of war that targets civilians. In earlier times, this would have been called siege warfare. But the goal remains starvation of the populace. Scott from Fairbush. Ruth says, killing the Iranian general. Whether or not one calls him a terrorist or not, Mike first and now all of you, the word for killing him is assassination, not taking him out. Which a mafia hitman would use? Ruth.
I still maintain it's assassination. That's a Republican talking point. You can kill a terrorist under international law. You cannot kill a member of a government, which he plainly was. It was a politically significant murder, and that's my definition of assassination. I really do think we're arguing words because that's how Trump wins, by arguing words.
Right, but the rationale was that he was a terrorist who made who posed an imminent threat on U.S. lives, and therefore that superseded the fact that he was a government official. So this wasn't an assassination, a political assassination, which would be illegal under U.S. law. This was the president ordering the
on
taking out of terrorist.
But, yeah. You know, as I've said before, that means, okay, if I buy that, then Petraeus is a target. Colin Powell is a target under the guise of war and American policy. How many Middle Easterners did they kill?
Yeah, and the president benefits from that argument.
Yep. Once again, it's not clear-cut that he's doing evil because he is very adept at presenting his side of the argument.
Kurt says, it's great to finally see your panel realizing our great President Trump is getting it right.
See?
Your program is my comedy relief in the morning. Thank you for the entertainment. That comes from Kurt. And Kurt, thanks for listening every day. You get the sardonic drip in my voice.
Well, I'm beginning to appreciate why Mike got so angry with me when I raised the question, because it does bring out these kind of people saying, see, you know, now he's right. No, I know no such thing.
Rhetorical questions are important when you're discussing these.
Well, you know, Rosemary, I wrote a column this week that's coming out this week, and that people who say that, you know, Trump is going to win, 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 are basically creating a safe haven for Bernie. Because my theory is this. People who love Bernie, and our listeners and so many others love him, believe that he's a great guy, but that he might lose. But if we're going to lose anyway, we may as well lose with somebody we like.
Didn't we do that in 2016?
Well, I don't know.
I guess not, because we didn't like. Well, we many of us did not like Hillary.
How many more letters you got there, Chief?
Here I got one and two.
All right. So why don't we do those? We'll take a quick break and then we'll shift gears a bit. Right?
Whatever you say. You're the chief.
Okay.
Christopher says, bombs on a plane. Several years back, I was flying with commercial photography flash equipment and tested positive for explosives at a small airport in Oregon. I was amused but understood, but I was shocked that my name was not taken. The flash pack in question was not confiscated for further analysis, and I was simply told it could not fly with me on the plane. I said in dismay to the TSA officer, you mean this actually could be a bomb and your only response is that it needs to fly FedEx? Am I free to go? To which he responded, we don't have the ability to confirm if it's actually an explosive. It left me cold. Safety is an illusion. And that's Christopher from Stuyvesant.
Thank you, Christopher. I love TSA
I think
stories.
Stuyvesant is where he...
She's crying, everyone.
I think Stuyvesant, he's from Stuyvesant. I think that's where he lives, not where he went.
Stuytown? Oh,
right, right. Not the high school in New York City, but the town in Columbia County.
Or maybe both. Who knows?
Maybe both.
Okay, Jeff says, global warming analogy. CNN headline this morning says oceans are absorbing as much as 5 Hiroshima bombs per second. We need drastic action to curb the mass extinction that are happening now.
We'll take a break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org. If you want to send a brief message, panel@wamc.org. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain are on the panel. We'll be right back. Like the wah-wah pedal, right, Alan? You got a wah-wah pedal for the banjo?
No, there's no wah-wah pedal for the banjo. But when I played with, with my band during my high school and college and graduate school years and played the trumpet, I'm sure we had a wah-wah pedal.
On the trumpet? There was somebody who actually did play an electric wah-wah trumpet. I forget who it was. Played with Eddie Harris, and it'll come to me. But that probably wasn't you. I'm guessing you weren't sitting in with Eddie Harris back in those days.
I didn't even know who he was.
Fair enough. China and the U.S. will be signing the deal tomorrow. It's the first trade deal, part of, I presume, many to come. And China is welcoming the Trump administration's decision to stop terming them a manipulator of currency. A foreign ministry spokesman said China would continue to reform its currency to bring it in line with market trends. So here we go. The first of perhaps 3 or more trade deals with China to be signed tomorrow. Anybody want to weigh in?
Anybody who thinks that Trump is a stupid man, he may be evil, but anybody who thinks he's stupid is just wrong. He knows that every time he even lifts an eyebrow towards the Chinese, the markets go up. So, and then somebody will write to us and say, don't forget the markets. Not everybody's in the market. No, but that's the perception of the United States economy doing well.
I also think it's likely that Trump has laid out for the next 8-9 months different mileposts and guideposts of what he's going to try and do with China to continue to have the market go up. That is the biggest indicator of whether he will be reelected or not, is how well the market does and how well the economy does. I'm not an expert on China policy, so it's hard to know exactly how this will affect us, but you can be sure that he's very focused on China. That is the best lever for him to push the stock market up.
I think we're seeing continuing proof of what a horrible negotiator he is. This is a huge win for China, and nothing has happened since the day that he came in and declared that they were a currency manipulator. Nothing has changed except we Americans, taking off the label, which is something China wants. What did we get for it? Many of the tariffs are still going to remain. The U.S. has been a loser on this. And once again, he's managed to fog it so that it sounds like he's done smart things.
Right. Fogging it is exactly what's happening. Many people have said that this designation that they were a currency manipulator, which began back in the 90s, it began long before Trump, was just a way of publicly shaming China. The International Monetary Fund had said that they were not officially, they determined that what China was doing with their currency did not amount to manipulation.
It was right on the line.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it is. I mean, they're playing the game. We're playing the game. But I agree with you completely. I think that it's fogged enough. It looks like there's progress. But what really is happening is it looks like things are settling down and the threats of tariffs affecting our bottom line seems to be going away. And all you have to do is look, anybody who has like a 401k or something, look after tomorrow and see it probably will be up. And that'll make people happy. They don't like Trump, but, I like seeing my 401k go up.
But we'll see what happens. I mean, the real crux of this agreement, and I don't think it'll be happening tomorrow, is the intellectual property and the technology and the abuse of that from China's side and the trade surplus, right? So that is still to come, I believe.
Oh, right. But it looks like they're talking about some agreement on intellectual property and technology. But will it be enforced? It'll be long after the election before we know if that's a true and honest agreement that's being upheld.
And let's not forget that the Chinese have something to gain from all of this also. We can say, you know, that the U.S. is the big winner, China's the big loser. I don't think so. I mean, I think China is a dictatorship. They have what they need in terms of appearances to keep their people happy and to keep the soybeans coming in and to do all of that stuff. I don't think we can count China out here.
To be clear, I think the opposite. I think the U.S. is the loser and China has won this battle. And they played risk. They played chicken, really hardball, and because they could have been truly hurt by this. And I think that China used Trump's fascination with power and control to get what they wanted. I do not think the United States is getting a lot out of this. Trump is getting a lot of that out of it, as you pointed it out, which is the semblance of standing up and protecting our economy.
And why can China do this? Because China is the only country that the United States is really dependent on China for buying our debt and also for all the products we use every day. We are super dependent on China right now, and they know that, and they use that to their advantage in negotiations.
And let's remember that when you talk about negotiation, that China is a dictatorship. And no matter what you say about the country, Trump has a lot of power. We are not a dictatorship yet. And I think it's important to know that they have a lot more leverage to play with when the leaders say this is the way it's going to be. That's the way it is.
Well, Bill Clinton, when he was running for president back in the 90s, his mantra or his campaign mantra internally was, it's the economy, stupid. People knew then that the economy was going to decide the outcome of the election. And the people in the Trump campaign know that. And they say, you know, historically, the voters sort of look at the way the economy is in April. And if the economy is good in April, they'll vote based on their perception of who's responsible for that economy being good. If it's bad, they'll take it out on the incumbent. And that's what happened to George Herbert Walker Bush. That's why Clinton won, because the economy wasn't that good until after.
Didn't Ross Perot.
Well, that had a big factor, too. He siphoned off some votes. Yes.
He sure did.
But I agree with your analysis, Mike.
Yeah,
totally.
I did, too.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. A couple of minutes here. Senate Republicans are signaling they'll reject the idea of simply voting to dismiss the articles of impeachment against President Trump. As the House prepares to send the charges to the chamber, senators are still negotiating the ground rules for the trial. Trump has suggested Republicans could dismiss the charges. However, key senators say it's not likely they want to hear the case. We all know Trump charged with abuse of power for pushing Ukraine to investigate Democratic rival Joe Biden, and that's what the charges are. He also faces a charge of obstruction of Congress in the probe. Trump says he did nothing wrong, and we should have some motion on this week, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. The House is expected to take it up today, right?
So they have to choose their managers.
Right. And what does that mean exactly?
Yeah. Do you want to put Mr. Schiff in there as a manager, or will that be like putting a red bandana
gasoline
in front of the bull?
Yeah.
You got to assume it's going to be Schiff, though, right?
Well, I would certainly like to see it as Schiff.
Isn't he a former federal prosecutor?
Yeah, former prosecutor.
He also, I think, knows the most. He is divisive, but he knows the most. He, you know, has been in all these meetings. He's been the leader. I find it hard to imagine that they'll put up someone other than Schiff. And there's also been rumors on the Republican side that the potential of Elise Stefanik may get that nod. And it's not a shoe-in.
You
but
mean
it's,
as a defense
manager?
Yes.
Holy cow! And she's really riding this, isn't she?
Her name has been mentioned.
And what other names have you heard?
For the Republicans?
Yeah.
Well, the big one would be Jordan, I think, right? He's the former Jim Jordan from Ohio. Yeah. Former prosecutor. He was, I would say, the Adam Schiff of the Republicans on the impeachment.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. It's the roundtable panel here today. Mike Spain, of the formerly of the Times Union, Empire Reports, J.P. Miller, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, WAMC's Alan Shartok. Somebody wrote a letter last week. I said, Mike Spain of the TU. And somebody wrote in and said, hey, no abbreviations, please. I thought that was pretty funny. Oh, that's good. All right, let's take a break here, and then we'll break for some news, and then we'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable, and we're listening to music of Codonecce today. The album is Supervillains, and it's the Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Joe should be back, if all goes well, 2 weeks from tomorrow, January 30th.
February 1st.
Oh, February 1st now? Oh, I thought it was January 30th.
It was January 30th and not February 1st. Big distinction, of course.
Well, when you're counting, I'm counting. I have my calendar marked, so we'll see what happens. It's the Roundtable panel. Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, and Alan Lettis.
Okay, yes, Chief. William, imminent or not? Hello, panel.
Hello.
With the recent provocation by Iran and a long history of this terrorist general plotting attacks, killing hundreds of U.S. soldiers, it's irrelevant whether the attack was imminent or not. The window of opportunity to take out this Iranian general and doing it without causing civilian casualties was a short one. A fluid military solution of a precision strike like this one shouldn't be compromised by notifying congressional leadership.
Oh, my goodness. Really, come on, you're just like getting rid of so many controls that keep America great. Civilian control over the military, laws on rules of engagement, and it's just incorrect that he could not have been taken out at any other time but now. He could have been taken out any time over the last 10 years.
And congressional, and making sure that Congress was informed. I mean, we have a tripartite system of government to look at each other, and this letter writer seems to ignore that.
And please let us recall that he did have time, the Trump administration did have time, to inform the Russian government and Lindsey Graham, his buddy, who has nothing to do with the... He's not in the Gang of Eight.
Do you think that if it wasn't an imminent attack, that some of the people that raised the red flag and were whistleblowers on the Ukraine call would do a whistleblow on this?
Well, the thing, JP, is that you have to remember that imminent was a term that they came up with.
Who's
imminent
they?
Was their term.
The
Trump administration's term. So when they said it was imminent, and then it turned out it wasn't, that became relevant, didn't it?
Yes.
Well, I'm not saying it wasn't, but to get to the bottom of it, there are a lot of civilian government employees, many of which came out with the whistleblower claims on the Ukraine call and said, hey, this was something that was done that was improper. Don't you think that there are still government officials in the top reaches of our government that were part and parcel to the communications between the president and his advisors on this, and that they might come out with a report saying that this was done improperly, the generals were advising against it, and the president said do it anyway? Don't you think that there might be someone to raise their hand and talk about it if there was something improper?
Well, those things you just said, don't we know it all? Haven't we been told that the president had a different view? His own Secretary of Defense was saying, you know, I didn't see what he saw.
By the way, just a quick time out. Rosemary, I ask you not to swear on this particular program. There are kids watching the program. So, you know, just keep it under wraps.
I'll be better
today.
Than usual. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
All right, we continue.
We should continue?
Oh, yeah.
Are you sure now?
Absolutely.
Okay. Kevin says, why do people like Trump?
Whoa.
This stuff is really coming in now.
Okay.
Why do people like Trump?
Why?
I have listed my opinions below, but would like to hear yours. What am I missing? A, because like Trump himself, they hate Obama, Hillary. B, state TV, Fox News has his control of multimedia, the constant brainwashing of his message and filter bubbles. C, they are small-minded and not interested in new or different ideas and willingly accept his lies. And D, swayed by his tough guy persona and don't see through it. And that's Kevin from Half Moon. Well, I think that the reason that they're there with them is that this is really a class war that is going on in this country right now, and that the Republicans think they like it the way that it is, they like where they are, and they don't mind having an underclass, and that's what this is all about.
Anybody watch the Clemson-LSU game last night?
I saw
Trump was there.
We watched it, and again, you can't read too much into it from a TV broadcast, but it seemed like the crowd
was very
went mental.
By him.
You know, it was really.
Where was the game?
In New Orleans, at the Superdome.
New Orleans,
yeah,
Louisiana.
And he and Melania were there. They were walking through the crowd, and it was a lot of yelling. And I couldn't really pay attention because I had, you know, some kind of basin in front of me. So, okay.
What do you mean you had a basin in front of you?
When you say he went crazy, clarify this in a good way. They were supporters.
It sound like it was very positive and, you know, cheering.
But again,
and
you can't really tell. You go to a Mets game at the end of the year, there are 4,000 people. It sounds like there's 40,000 people. It's the art of television sound. So I can't say for sure that it was the entire crowd, but it seemed loud. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Right. Well, I saw it reported this morning when I was skimming around on TV. I saw it on Fox News, and they portrayed it as if every single person was on top of their chair cheering and screaming in favor of Trump.
I don't think that's entirely possible.
Yeah. But maybe others were politely, you know, not jeering. I mean, there were not jeers. So that was not detectable.
Anytime a politician goes out in front of a sports crowd, it's very tenuous. And I'm surprised that I feel like almost every politician when they go out tends to get more booze than cheers.
More booze than cheers.
More booze, I would say.
Famously, Rudy Giuliani has been booed at Yankee games.
Yes.
The only time that I did not see that was when W went out to Yankee Stadium to throw out the first pitch after 9/11.
Yeah, that was.
And he threw a strike.
Yeah.
Well, he did once. Was a part owner of the Texas Rangers. You know, W.
All right, back to the letters.
David says,
I'm sorry. I think that was a really great letter because why do people like Trump? It's getting at the idea of his populist appeal and how you go about beating him. It really is important to understand what the appeal is. And I think that there's a tendency right now to say, oh, it's like a cult, which demeans both the people who support him and the tactics and techniques he uses to win that support.
And yet when you look at the numbers in the polls, right?
Yeah.
He's constant. He's right where he's been in the mid-40s. And the Democrats are, you know, higher. He's not liked by a majority of the people in this country.
But he's liked by a lot of people who strongly like him, and the people who don't like him like all different things, and they're not united. It isn't one or the other, you know.
The missed opportunity for Trump here is that this is a man. I did not like him ever from the minute he came down the escalator, but many others were saying, hey, this is something different. And he got attention, parlayed it, and he really actually could be reaching out right now to get more supporters. He's stayed steady, but why hasn't he reached out to get those people in the middle, some of those Democrats who are not really happy with the party?
Because he's afraid he loses the base.
Yeah, that's all he has done, and isn't that a shame? And he could have done it, Alan. He could even have gotten us. If he had come in and gotten gun control, reasonable gun control measures, if he had done something on immigration, even inspired others to do immigration, if he had done infrastructure, we all would be sitting here talking in a totally different line on this program.
Well, guns and immigration, though, those are core to his constituency. He's never going to go soft on either of those issues.
But he's exactly the person who could have. I want to go back. Made it reasonable. Nobody else can do it.
Are there any things that Trump has done that you agree with, that you like?
He's gotten political prisoners back. Yeah, we get listeners all the time say, you can't say anything good about him. I can.
He did criminal
reform. He got a lot of political prisoners back. Mm-hmm.
He's being a champion of getting pharmaceuticals prices listed and fighting with the pharmaceutical companies.
Hasn't done anything about it, but he has talked about it.
He said he was going to do that, but he didn't do it.
But, well, there is an executive order, isn't there, or an FDA order for companies to start listing their retail prices? I mean, that transparency is a big step.
But before we even deal with that, I want to go back to something that Rosemary said a few minutes ago. I want to know which of the Democratic candidates fit into the concept of being non-traditional. You got Bernie, and he is, of course, a labeled self-identified socialist. And after that,
Buttigieg, who's openly gay, that's certainly different than the ordinary.
But right. His positions are very moderate and middle of the road, wouldn't you say?
And he is Midwestern, and you hear him talk, and it sounds like Midwestern values. And in my opinion, many of those swing states that Democrats need to win to beat Trump are Midwestern states of people with Midwestern values that you're trying to win over. I think Buttigieg's message is different than what you hear from Elizabeth Warren and Bernie and Biden.
Well, I think that Bernie and Warren are very similar, and so therefore, if you're going to say Bernie is a rabble rouser and different, then she is too, and she's a woman, which automatically,
by the way, is why they're fighting with each other.
I know, really ugly. I hate that. But the others, you're right. Biden and Klobuchar and Buttigieg are all fighting to make themselves look very normal. We haven't heard from Deval Patrick. I don't know what he is. And Bloomberg is interesting. He's certainly different. That's a different kind of campaign. Yeah,
see, I think Bloomberg could win the election.
Yeah, even though he's not in the debate. Tonight's the seventh debate.
No.
He's not there.
No, but his strategy
not,
is Super Tuesday.
He's not there. His problem always has been, he's always wanted to run for president. His problem always has been, how does he get over the fact that he was once a Republican? He can't do it. The Democrats won't forgive him for that. And so he's at 1% in the polls. But I believe that if he were the candidate, he would win.
He's also
You mean the general?
In the general.
Okay.
Although he's been hugely successful in business, he's a bit risk averse with his persona. And this strategy that he is setting himself out on, if he loses, he can simply say, well, I had a bad strategy. It wasn't me.
Howard Wolfson.
I think it's an ill-advised strategy for him not to win. Okay, so he's not going to win Iowa, but he could put himself in position to come in second or third place in New Hampshire, which I think Bill Clinton did, and say, "Hey, they're calling me the comeback kid," and he went on to win the election.
Yeah.
So what would you do if you were him now?
I would go hard in Massachusetts and New Hampshire and try and place second or third in New Hampshire, call myself the comeback kid like Bill Clinton did.
Well, I would rescind his stupid restrictions on his own communications empire and let them report on him.
Mike Bloomberg not there tonight. It is the seventh debate. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, and Tom Steyer all there tonight. And we were talking about this during the break. The debates thus far, the first six, have been, while there are policy disagreements and they can get heated, they've been generally sort of friendly. Tonight may be a little different. There is the dust-up between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Warren says that Sanders told her during a private meeting 2 years ago he didn't think a woman could win the White House. For his part, Sanders has denied telling Warren that a woman couldn't win.
Rosemary.
Yeah, I'm not sure why this is a big issue. I don't think a woman could win.
And yeah, you've said that before.
I've said it repeatedly, and I don't think I will see one for a long time. So I'm not. If Bernie did say that, I am not quite sure why it is so offensive.
I, on the other hand, think a woman could win. It's just a matter of which woman you pick to do that. And I think this country is poised and ready to have a woman president, just like so many other countries.
Well, that's a political statement, though. I mean,
what's your point?
It sounds like you're endorsing that, and that's perfectly fine. From a strategic point of view, can a woman muster enough support to win the important states and be elected? Hillary Clinton came very, 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 very close. If you took away just one of the things that worked against her, like Comey's remarks a week before the election,
right,
or perhaps the way the Russian bots went into Facebook and promoted, her adversaries, or the interference in the hacking of the Democratic National Committee's emails and then having them made public. And you take just one of those things away.
And there's one you didn't mention, which is that people didn't like her.
Well, but if she had gone to a couple of states in the last couple of weeks, She came very, very close, and she did have 3 million more votes of Americans than Trump did. So I think it's completely possible that a woman could win.
Yeah,
it may not be right now because maybe perhaps the right woman isn't there. You know, it's a combination of things and dynamics.
We're debating it like a philosophical question.
Right.
Bernie talked to her, to Elizabeth Warren, in 2018, in a total context. So he is looking at who's available and who would win. Tulsi Gabbard, come on. Who else? Kamala Harris. She flamed out, though. She really did.
I don't understand
it. She was seen as
She was not known at all in
2018. Well, except that she is terrific.
She is.
And I think if you had her up there with Donald Trump, you would have had a worthy adversary for the guy. I just don't understand what it was that turned people off about
it. Well, a lot of people also look towards 2024 as the potential first time that a female might be elected president with Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez.
Yep. I think it's going to take a charismatic politician in the Bill Clinton style to do it. Nikki Haley, I used to think, could be the one, too.
Yeah.
But her defense of Trump has really fallen on a sour note lately.
Except Rosemary, if she plays her cards right, and not according to Alan, but according to her needs, they throw out Pence. They put her in as the vice presidential candidate. And I think that's what this is all about. And she wins, and she becomes the first female president.
Yeah, that you could slip in that way. I mean, Sarah Palin, for a brief moment, looked like she would be someone
very
who had...
Very brief moment.
Yeah, very brief. Yeah, but do you remember the acceptance speech when she came in?
She had an interview with Katie Couric, but that was... maybe a week.
Oh, lots of things. We'll get name one. Oh, just too many to name. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, we saw Cory Booker call it quits on his campaign.
Yes. Which is too bad. I mean, he's a remarkable person. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He's the mayor of a city much larger than South Bend, Indiana. We'll hear from him again. He's 50 years old. Yeah. He's relatively young in this field.
So what was it that cost him?
Too many other candidates. So his appeal was diffuse. He wasn't the only black candidate. He wasn't the only smart candidate. He wasn't the only Eastern candidate. All of the elements that he was the only unity candidate. And unity is not an issue compared to immigration or race or economy.
He also isn't an uber progressive. He is in the moderate mold. Like a Biden, Klobuchar, and Buttigieg, and he was just the fourth person on that list.
Exactly.
When, by the way, Klobuchar, Buttigieg, and Biden are all pretty bunched together. There are now four candidates, and that's why I think you could see fireworks tonight in the debate, because usually in the debate there's someone leading and they're playing defense.
Right.
Now there are four people that all are trying to take advantage and potentially attack others, and will have one-liners ready and retorts ready from their staffers.
Like a round robin.
And they have to rob from each other.
Now here's the question, Mr. Political Observer. Given how close these four are in Iowa, how important is this debate? In other words, they have 3 weeks after this, either way.
Well, this debate is important. I'll tell you why. Because the American people like to get on board with the people they think that are going to win. And if somebody wins in the primary, and this is the debate that does it, it's going to be very important. Is it necessary that somebody, quote, wins the caucus? No. But on the other hand, like chicken soup, couldn't hurt.
Well, so the most recent Iowa poll from the Des Moines Register, Biden 24, Bernie 18, Buttigieg 17, Warren 15.
What's the margin of error?
Close.
The margin of error is usually somewhere, you know, 2 or 3 or 4%. But so any one of those four candidates could win Iowa. And it's huge stakes tonight for the debate. You're going to see them come out with their full firepower.
I really have been interested in the reporting showing how obsessed with the responsibility of their jobs the Iowans have been, because they know this has symbolic and really deep political significance. So they feel the weight of the world on them, that they have to pick the person.
Many say they may change their mind in the next two weeks.
Which does make you think. I bet viewership, listenership of this debate will be very high in Iowa and New Hampshire.
The caucus is such a stupid way of doing it.
It is.
Why?
Because it's much easier to go in, cast your vote, and get out. this caucus business means you got to hang around, you got to go into the right place,
stand in lines.
It obviously will keep people away from the
process. What do they actually do in the caucus?
Somebody should explain it, but you basically line up in the place where your person
who
is
your first choice, yeah. And everybody gets in one corner of the gym, yeah. In their piles of people.
Yeah,
and they say, okay, well,
sounds pretty modern.
Glad you asked.
Yeah.
It's like a civics lesson in elementary school.
The way
school,
we pick
actually.
Our leaders.
Yeah, it really is.
But if you think about it, Warren and Bernie Sanders have a total of like about 33-34% of the vote. When
That's
one what, of them yeah. leaves the campaign, will their the supporters of the other one rush to the first one?
Except
will one of them leave?
Nobody's leaving the campaign.
That's the tough thing is Bernie's not leaving.
How many are actually left? I know that Bloomberg's still there. Deval Patrick is still there, although we haven't heard much. How many others are there?
Nine, altogether nine. The six tonight, Deval Patrick, Bloomberg, and...
Tom Steyer.
Tom Steyer's on the debate tonight.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Tulsi,
yeah.
Is she on?
Tulsi Gabbard hasn't quit yet, you're right. Yeah.
Okay, are you ready for some more letters?
What the heck?
Whatever you say,
sure.
Boss. Okay. David says, Iran, Schumer. This plane was shot down because Iran's military and civilian aviation authorities failed to coordinate on a basic level. I think the strike on Soleimani was reckless and stupid, but to blame an airliner on Trump is absurd. Also, when the Senate voted on the Iran nuclear deal in 2015, Schumer wasn't the Democratic leader. As one panelist said, it was Harry Reid. Schumer wasn't even number two Democrat. That was Dick Durbin. And that's from David in Albany. Well, David, I would respond.
I think it happened in 2015.
Yeah, in 2015. Iran nuclear deal in 2015. I would say that Trump did start the entire reactive process.
Yeah, they were casualties of war. I mean, to say it was Trump's fault is kind of a cause and effect is kind of hard to say that directly, but it wouldn't have happened.
Well, I said it, yes,
general.
I agree with you, and I said it directly. Joe said, a jar of Ajvar.
Delicious.
Ivar.
Ivar.
Oh, my yeah. God, it's so good if you haven't had it.
Oh, yeah. TSA loves it.
They're enjoying it right now in Dulles Airport.
They know. They're smart. The TSA say, hey,
Don't get me started.
Hey, Frank, get the Ritz crackers.
Experienced travelers know that even duty-free liquids, gels, pastas, paste, et cetera, will not pass muster at U.S. security checkpoints. The way to bring home such items is to pack those into your checked luggage. We know that already from Rosemary's Good reportage. When you retrieve your luggage before customs prior to rechecking your bags for the U.S. domestic connecting flight, and that's from Joe.
Thank you, Joe. I've learned that 10-year-old lesson already.
Well said.
Or have you?
Soleimani. Good morning, panel. From the Wall Street Journal, Mr. Trump, after the strike, told associates he was under pressure to deal with General Soleimani. From GOP senators he views as important supporters in his coming impeachment trial in the Senate, associates said. And that's Andy from Oneonta. Come on.
There's a lot
please?
Of hearsay. And one thing I did hear was that this was actually approved 7 months ago, and I'm not sure if that's true or not.
In which case, you could have told the Democratic congressional leaders what you were up to.
Exactly. Well, don't you think Trump is hunting for his own Osama bin Laden? He tried to do that with the ISIS leader, and it didn't quite stick.
Al-Baghdadi.
And then he did it here. And evidently, there was another attack that was supposed to happen simultaneously to the Iranian generals.
The guy in Yemen.
In Yemen.
Yes.
And it got botched or got called off. It didn't work or something. So he's trying to get this reputation. You know, Obama gets to say he took out Osama bin Laden, the guy who was behind 9/11. And Trump just hasn't been able to get a bad guy that of that stature, and he's trying.
However, he has cured cancer, and he helped the president of Ethiopia get a Nobel Peace Prize.
Mm. You think he can get in on inventing the internet?
Nutty. He did, yeah, all over the internet. That's why I read it, so I know.
No,
it's
I mean,
amazing.
I have about 150,000 letters here. Would you like me to go through some of them?
We have a couple of minutes before news. Yeah, read 100,000 at least.
All right. Says Dick from Deering, New Hampshire. President Trump did not start the war in Iraq. There's lots of historical precedent. Long ago, he sent some people to assassinate a prominent general, and they failed at that but killed a lot of other soldiers in his army. And while Patton's people were chasing Rommel's people around North Africa, I do not think they asked Congress for a new declaration of war. Come on.
Come
that
on.
Is so spurious. Okay. That, and by the way, that letter is way too long. Don't write long letters. Ray told you that?
Okay.
News writers.
And no abbreviations.
Okay. Carol says, deficit, Saudi Arabia. Our deficit now stands over $1 trillion. Why does no one mention this? I guess you found out via, how did you find out about that, Carol? I knew it from what I hear and read. Are we sending back to Saudi Arabia members of the Florida Army base after the killings of personnel there? Why don't we eliminate the bad Saudi operatives that were involved with this loss of American service members?
We are sending them.
Yeah,
back.
We are.
21 are being sent back.
Yeah. They looked at their emails, and they found out they were jihadists.
And Barr called it an act of terror yesterday.
And some of them had child pornography on their computers.
Oh, my God.
You'd think we'd be kind of, you know, monitoring their emails anyway, right?
Anyway, Rick and Otis says Trump testifying. Panel, if Trump wants to testify at the impeachment trial, the Democrats should jump on that and have him appear. With two sentences, he will contradict himself and probably perjure himself as well. Hey, Rick, do you really think Trump is going to show up? He's not. He says he was willing to. He doesn't want to. He also says that he wants them to just say nothing doing, you're out with the and reject the entire impeachment effort. And that's what he really wanted, but he didn't get it. And Jonathan said, panel, in the history of Western democracy, has there ever been such a total corruption of a whole political party as has happened with the Republicans now? Thank you. Jonathan from Woodstock. And then we heard from Joan. Is Trump's policy working? I find it surprising and disturbing that asking a question, is Trump's policy in Iran working, did not elicit a direct answer but an accusation instead. I was under the impression.
Too.
What?
Me too.
I was under the impression that the roundtable panel was a source of critical analysis and not dogmatic knee-jerking. I'm open to a do-over. It's a great question.
It is a great question.
Okay, don't you feel bad now?
Well, I didn't think I was a dogmatic knee-jerker, but don't you think that it's a little bit too early to say whether this quote-unquote worked?
Totally.
And
it will know
is,
in a decade.
And what is the
in
aim?
A decade.
What is the aim other than to foster chaos?
Oh, okay, we have to take a break. I'm sorry. I'm getting the signal 29:55.
More than a decade.
Oh, it's not on my sheet.
It'll be 17 years.
Oh, it is. Let's take a break, and we'll be back on the roundtable. Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's Tuesday morning, 10:34 or thereabouts. It's the Roundtable panel. Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Alan Shartok. If you've tuned in before, you know that our friend Alan, Dr. Alan, reads the email.
I do, and I'll try to get through as many as I can. We have a ton of them.
Okay.
Here, boss. Judy says, Deval Patrick, as a Massachusetts resident, I was interested to see that Deval Patrick was tossing his hat in the ring. But since then, I haven't heard anything about a campaign or even if he's still in the race.
Yeah,
what do
too.
You all know about him? And if he's still in, what are his chances? His chances right now are not good. I happen to think he's a wonderful governor and a wonderful man. I know him personally well. I know what his personal standards are. I know how he stood up for his wife when she was ill. He's an unbelievable guy. Unfortunately, he came in the same day, I believe, as
Bloomberg did,
and he has been invisible. I do get his campaign schedule on my email every day, so he's definitely in.
Okay. Where has he been? Where is he talking? Who's he talking to?
Okay, yeah. So, you know, he goes around. Goes to, you know.
So he gets the schedule.
Alan
but
did
he
not actually
read it.
Open
Even
the emails.
Even his biggest fan doesn't read where his schedule is.
But
that
see,
guy's
you know,
in trouble.
In fairness, Alan sees a lot of emails every day.
A thousand emails every day.
In fairness.
I go, delete.
This is not a knock on you. It's a knock on Deval Patrick, who announced that he's going to run for president, has become invisible, so that even you, one of his most outspoken fans that I know of, does not know what he is doing.
Well, you make a point. I think he's terrific.
Not a terrific presidential candidate.
Doesn't have the money.
So it came in very late. You got to wonder the thought process involved. If you weren't going to go really hard at this, why come in and then just be silent at the last minute?
I don't get it. I think everybody has relatives who say to him, aren't you running for president? Shouldn't you run for president?
I don't have any relatives who say that to me.
You would think that Deval would have a big advantage in New Hampshire with Massachusetts being a neighboring state. New Hampshire gets all their media from Boston. I mean, he should just be going hard in New Hampshire. It's a small state. It would only take $3 or $4 million to mount a good campaign. Yeah. I hope you're listening, Deval.
He could go door to door almost.
Yes.
Stephen wrote, Ray and Allen.
Yo.
Miles Davis is the one who connected his trumpet to the wah-wah between 69 and 81.
You know, but I think I was thinking about a sax player who was playing an electric alto sax.
Is that what you're thinking?
Yes, I was.
Who cares? Michael said...
I know. It's not the banjo.
Michael said...
Right? Miles Davis...
Let's talk about royals.
Michael said... Trumpet.
Who pay for their defense, their security in Canada?
Okay, Michael says Trump. There was a report today that federal spending is at its highest level since 2012. 2012, they were helping the economy recover from the 2009 recession. It's a false belief that the economy is good. It doesn't matter whether it's good or not. It matters whether it's perceived as being good.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
And who gets the credit for it being good? Even though the economy has gotten better for 10, the unemployment rate has gone down for 10 straight years, who's going to get the credit for unemployment being low?
Yeah, good point. Russell says, Trump solves crisis. Is Trump's Iran policy working? One must ask, to what end? If peace, stability, and bringing Iran into the fold of normalcy, the answer is no. As with China, Trump makes a huge mess. If he's lucky, he gets the needle almost back to where it was and claims great progress. Mission accomplished, Russell.
Regime change is his goal, I think.
And do we have to go somewhere?
Heck no. Have fun.
Okay. And Jeff says, whose fault is it? Panels, you preface your whole fault is the plane crash with Iran, attack our embassy in Baghdad, Iraq, sovereign U.S. property, and an act of war. Iran started it. That's what the Shartok twins used to say. He started it. Iran started it, and unprovoked. They are the guilty party, said Jeff. And James.
Well, they're not without guilt at all. No, I don't think anyone here
wonderful.
Is saying that.
Yeah,
Iran has been an instigator of all kinds of trouble.
Yep. James says, panel, let's change gears and talk about something important such as the movies. How is it possible that the benighted voters of the Academy could not have included Greta Gerwig among the nominees for Best Director? If anyone on the panel has seen Little Women, I did and I loved it, by the way.
I did not love it, but I think she deserved a nomination.
You didn't love it, though.
I did not like her movie, but...
the direction was good?
Yeah, the direction was amazing.
It was terrific.
Interesting.
I didn't think it worked, but she took a whole new slant on the movie.
She did.
And the sequencing of it. I mean, you get credit for originality, and they need a woman. How many times does the Academy need to be told diversity? So here is somebody, it's not even a stretch. Sometimes they appoint people just as a token. She would not have been a token.
Nope.
It was explained yesterday to me via the radio that each nomination is voted upon by that constituency. So it's not like there's one Academy that votes on all of them, and that explains a little bit about why it happened. So all the directors voted on.
Is that right? Are we sure
director.
Of this? Because I remember Marge Champion showing me all of the films that she had gotten because she was a voter in the Academy. And I don't know that she only got to vote on Dancers, for example. So
even if that were the case, directors is such a boys' club they can't admit one woman nomination in?
I'm not defending. I'm just saying that's how it was explained on the radio to me yesterday.
Interesting.
Well, it could be.
I need to look this up.
James says, panel, let's change gears and talk about something such as a movie. We did that, right?
We did that.
All right. John says to Rosemary, dear Rosemary, I'm not so sure who I dislike more, Trump or the mullahs. That's the choice the Iranian people have to make every day. Who do you trust? I think the assassination of Suleiman by the Trump regime and the sentiment fell behind the mullahs gave them for once the moral high ground. But the disastrous downing of the plane changed all of that. John.
Yeah.
That was
good
point. To you. Okay. Keith says, no Trump Tuesday. How about no Trump Tuesdays?
That would be
we tried that early on.
We have heard his name every hour of every day for 5 years. It's exhausting.
Good point.
David says, Bloomberg's $1 billion. Did I hear Monday's panel discussion correctly that Bloomberg is pledging to donate $1 billion to the Democratic presidential cause, or at least that someone is urging him to do so? No, he said he would do it. I believe that's correct.
Yeah, he'd like to give it to himself for his campaign, and he's spending lots of money.
And Allen called this a brilliant idea. If I heard that correctly, does that mean Allen is okay with having one really rich guy throw enormous amounts of money around to put his Bloomberg's thumb on the scale in an election.
Well, that's interesting.
If you believe that, or if you believe that he is a man of principles, that even if he can't have the nomination, he believes it's so important to get rid of Trump that he's doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. That's where I stand, David of Queensbury, where everybody should be playing by the rules. Jamie.
That's a fair question, though, right? I mean, if you put $1 billion
in. Everything's a fair question. What, you think that anybody who spends a lot of money is out because they're spending a lot of money in this country? Are you kidding?
He's already spent $200 million. He's going to spend much more than $1 billion. I think he's going to spend
at least
$2
billion. The question was, David's question was, if he, and I don't know this is true, but it was brought up yesterday that if Bloomberg doesn't win, he says he's going to give $1 billion.
That is true. He said that.
Okay. So that David's question from Queensbury was, is it okay for one guy to have his thumb on the scales, be $1 billion donor?
Okay, well, so Koch brothers have done that. Adelson has done that.
Yeah. Supreme Court about that, not us. No, it's not right.
$1,000 to a campaign. It's okay to do that, but not a billion? Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Jamie says, sometimes you hate a wrong for being right. While I can find many ways to criticize Trump's actions with the assassination, yeah, I just want to point out how that person changed the world we lived in. Who do you think masterminded the deal with Ronald Reagan to withhold the release of hostages after the presidential election and resulted in the loss of President Carter? Imagine if the world, if Carter was reelected, the energy policy, global warming being addressed in the 70s, a national debt paid off, Carter was the first fiscal conservative. And rather than the loss of the middle class under Reagan, unions strengthened, retraining of workers prioritized, and ice cream for all of us, says Jamie. I like ice cream.
I mean, Reagan's actions in the Iran negotiations were despicable. They had the deal made, and he held off announcing it until after his inauguration.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a really good point, though, and I try to do that myself because I do dislike the president so much that when something good happens, am I looking for the bad in it to nitpick? And that is a bad thing to do. I would be magnanimous if I saw him doing things, even if he failed at them. If he succeeded in reaching out, I have not seen him reach out.
And Melinda says, and Trump won without getting the most popular vote, so he may not need to be liked by the majority to win again. That's true. Yep. Absolutely.
Yep.
True.
Yep.
And Garrett writes too long a letter. I'll read the first sentence.
Oh, boy.
Good morning, panel. Warren claimed that in 2016 meeting, Bernie Sanders stated a woman cannot be president. What a convenient timing for this claim to be made 3 weeks before Iowa. Okay, well, this is when elections are won or lost, right?
Well, I mean, the whole thing about did he say it or not is it's really distasteful. Democrats should not be fighting. But again, if say he did say it, okay, say she's right. He's not wrong.
Well, it's putting Senator Warren in a tough position, mm-hmm, by her campaign leaking it, because they are going to ask her tonight at the debate, did Senator Sanders say this? Which one of you is telling the truth on that?
Awful.
So we will see how that message plays out. Hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't the first question that the debate people asked tonight.
Well, I have Bernie and Elizabeth are meeting today before the debate to figure out how they're going to do this so they don't end up killing each other. They both will look bad.
Our conversations were confidential.
Collusion.
Are they going to agree on what was the content of the conversation?
Or a way to frame it, because they're already in disagreement publicly, so they have to reframe it somehow.
And they need each other's votes. It's that simple.
Right. Whoever doesn't win between the two of them needs the other's supporters.
Anyway, Sonia wrote us too long a letter.
Oh,
so I'll only read the first
sentence.
With Sanders surging in the polls, fundraising, and racking up progressive endorsements leading up to the first primaries, it's no surprise the attacks would be coming. The gross disappointment to me is that they're coming from Elizabeth Warren. Well, they're coming from Elizabeth Warren, and they're coming from Bernie, to be honest with you.
Well, this began actually last week when she began to take the gloves off, so to speak, saying that Bernie Sanders had campaign ads who were campaign aides who were bringing out the point
and
that
they
only
had
elites
it was
support
printed,
her.
Mike. They had the print script that the volunteers
their talking
were
points were to. Mm-hmm. To say that she's not bringing new people into the party, she just has the elites supporting her, and that may be true.
Mark says, is Trump's strategy on Iran working? We shouldn't put too much significance on the protests in Iran after the government admitted it shot down the Ukrainian passenger plane. Remember the massive protests and near revolution that occurred after the rigged election of hardliner Ahmadinejad in 2009. They were brutally put down. Protests rarely result in regime change. More often than not, they are squelched.
But don't you think Iran has been a country ready to emerge?
Yes.
And if the right sequence, I don't know what that right sequence is, but if the right sequence were to happen, the moderates could take over. And over a period of perhaps 20 years, it would be a moderate country that would be accepted into the world community.
That was the hope of the Iran Treaty Agreement.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it would, I mean, right now, Iran has more potential to create a nuclear weapon than they did before happened. And that's the important thing. The world is a more dangerous place.
Yep.
If they don't have it already.
Right.
If what would you be thinking if you were the Grand Ayatollah right now?
He's happy. He's not happy about the protests. He's in trouble economically. But Trump could not have played better into his hands by getting rid of that treaty. They didn't want the treaty in the first place.
And let's remember that the way that this works out is that you got the Revolutionary Guard, you got the Ayatollah, and dictators generally do not like to give up power.
Generally.
And remember what he does. He's smart. He allows the so-called moderate presidential candidate to win. But he's still the guy who's calling all the shots.
Yeah.
Okay. Nicholas says, good to hear you, Rosemary. I was concerned yesterday morning. On a different note, I received an email yesterday looking for volunteers for February Fund Drive. As recent events have become so plentiful here and abroad, with the news cycle changing so rapidly, perhaps Alan could start mentioning the lockbox now.
Oh. Well, you know, you go to WAMC.org, you make a pledge now, it's going to count, right?
Yes, and we could get $750,000 locked down and do a one-day fund drive? Nicholas from Tilson. Thank you, Nicholas. That was great. And you really do understand how it works.
All right. Well, that is where we will have to leave this. Yeah, we're done, man.
How can we be done?
Nothing on the Royals?
We'll be back tomorrow.
I'm talking about them tomorrow.
Discuss the Royals, perhaps. Thanks to Alan Shartok, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain for being here. You're listening to The Roundtable.